Jackson Feely, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for agreeing to be interviewed today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Well, you don't know where it's going to go
a good
yet.
Chat. It's like therapy. I think podcasts are like therapy, honestly. I love it.
Agreed. And like, I think most of us in this world need therapy. Yeah. We've just been having a conversation previously. So we were introduced by a mutual friend, Anthony Ago. Gary will absolutely love that we've name checked him on the podcast. So he introduced me to you because he said, you two will get on so well. Jack's got a great story and everything that I do is about storytelling, getting messages out there, helping people, whether they have a voice already or don't, to get their message out there. So for those who don't know you, who is Jackson Feely of today? How would you describe yourself and what you do?
I've recently just sort of left the prison service. I've been a prison officer for 6 years and about, well, coming up to 3 years ago now, I made the decision to transition from female to male. And I did that within a prison environment. So the impact that has had on not only me, but everyone around me, my family, my friends, prisoners, colleagues, has sort of inspired me to go on a mission to inspire as many people as possible to live a life more true to themselves, whatever that might mean.
So a life more true to themselves. So this being, you know, for many people, if they'd have met you previously, they just see you as Jax, but you're really open about the journey that you've been on. You've documented the entire journey. You know, most people would have said that was probably the most difficult position for you to be in, working in the prison service, you know, and you've done that for 6 years. So let's kind of begin at the beginning with this transitional period. So you started 3 years ago is where you made the decision, but that's not an overnight decision where you just kind of wake up one day and go, oh, this is what I feel like today. How did you get to the point where you actually made that realization? There must have been some, you know, difficult decisions along the way, lots of challenges.
So the kind of the most common question that I get is, how did you know? Or like, did you always know? And there's kind of two answers to the question. Mm-hmm. So although I only really sort of came to the decision of understanding and accepting that I needed to transition at the age of 26, 27 years old, when I look back now, I absolutely knew from the age of 4 or 5, I just didn't have the vocabulary to verbalize how I was feeling. Mm. You know, I didn't know that transitioning existed. I didn't know any of that. There wasn't the visibility. You know, there's still really, it's still struggling now, but there wasn't that sort of, this is how you feel. And so for a long time, I just thought I struggled with my mental health throughout, you know, various parts of my life. I was always trying to fill a void. I was always chasing something I couldn't find. Mm-hmm. There was always an element of feeling uncomfortable, anxiety, and constantly changing things and adding to my life and getting rid of that and attaching myself to people and all these things that I look at now and I think, oh my God, you know, like absolutely new.
Now you're at the destination, you've got the map, but you didn't have it then.
Yeah, yeah.
So if we go all of the way back to what you mentioned in like age 4 or 5, obviously you don't have the vocabulary for most things then.
Well,
so if we were, but I mean, some might argue that as a Scouser, you don't even have that in your 40, but did you feel different? How would you describe it then? Were you upset? Were you sad? Did you feel like you didn't fit in? How would you have described it looking back now?
So the main factor is the fact that, and I only recently started thinking about this about a year ago, from being really little, I always had sort of like little, you know, because we all have little elements of OCD and little compulsive things or thoughts that we do. And from being really little up until about 25 years old, I used to say things in my head and I used to have 4 little prayers, so to speak, that I used to say over and over again in my head. And I used to say, please don't anything bad happen. I would never change anything. Please be okay, everything. And I love being a girl.
Wow. And this was from the age of 4 or 5?
Yeah.
So the first 3... I think a lot of people will relate to, you know, if they've got, you know, I don't want to die or whatever as a kid, you know, I've got 2 little boys. They're not so little anymore. They're, you know, just 10, 13 and almost 10.
Yeah.
And my 9-year-old, almost 10-year-old will say things like, you know, well, does heaven really exist? Mm. Why do people have to die? And things like these. So those first 3 are kind of, you know, quite common,
like an anxiety,
yeah.
like a worrying about things.
But the fourth one,
yeah.
being the, remind me again, what was the word?
I love being a girl and I would never change. What did I used to say? I love being a girl and I would never change who I am or the way I am.
So this and was just, you used to from go, such a go, young go, go, age, go, go, just go, trying go, to convince go. Yourself.
Yeah, like that's what I think. So it just used to go round and round in my head, and I wouldn't even be really conscious of it. Like I'd say it a million times just before like I fell mantra. Asleep, but then it would just always go. If I was like, it would just always be going on. And I only recently like thought about it and thought, I wonder when I stopped doing that, because it was like in my 20s.
Wow.
And I look back now and I think, oh my God, like you've just spent 20 years trying to convince yourself you was happy being a girl.
Because you lived your life normally as a girl, although obviously, yeah. you know, we look in today's world, what kids, you know, I remember my eldest wanted a cleaning set and I was like, yeah, let's get the cleaning set. And there were people who'd be like, oh, you know, why would you buy a kid? He wanted a doll. He wanted a baby boy doll because I was pregnant with my little Aww. Boy. But in, you know, it was a girls have this and boys yeah. have this. So were you brought up around that?
Yeah. So that's the thing, isn't it? Like everything is gendered. Mm. And I grew up a tomboy, you know, I wanted the tractor instead of the pram and stuff like that. I always had my dad's work boots on, you know, I was a tomboy. And I always felt like there was just something. And my mum describes it as always this element of anxiety, this element of feeling uncomfortable, this element mm-hmm. of not fitting in, you know. I used to run out of shops crying because I didn't want to shop in the girls' section. It made me feel really uncomfortable. I felt like a boy in girls' clothes. Well, I felt like I looked like a boy in girls' clothes. And I didn't. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
And then, but I couldn't shop in the boys' section because I was a girl. And it just made me feel so uncomfortable. And I just think about things like that. You know, I convinced my mum and dad that I wanted to move school at 14 because I was obsessed with being the real me.
Oh,
or
so
like starting again. You know, I
and
didn't
you,
know what that meant.
You openly told them.
Yeah,
right.
I didn't know what that meant. I just, suddenly, I was happy in school. You know, I threw myself into sport because all I wanted to do was make mum and dad proud. And when I was playing sport, I was happy. I was me. I didn't have to think about being Jess or what to wear. Mm. And I convinced myself, like 14 years old, I need to move school. I need to start again. There was not a problem. There wasn't a problem.
Do you think that's because
you
were
so
looking for
passionate about yeah. it and convinced. I'd spent months convincing mum and dad. I convinced them and they let me move.
Wow.
And then 2 months later, I wanted to go back because nothing was different.
So you've always been chasing something.
Yeah, I moved back. So I've always made these like impulsive decisions. Like I'm chasing something I can't find. I'm trying to fill this void. I'll buy a car, that'll fix it. I'll buy a house, that'll fix it. You know, I'll join the military, that'll fix it. And things did for four years, for 2 weeks, for, you know, I'll be friends with that person. I'll bring that into my life. I'll do this, I'll do that. And it was always trying to fill a void that I was never, ever going to fill.
But it's only hindsight that's enabled you to yeah. look back and see this because, you know, I think of how many little boys that I know who will, you know, want to dress up in, like I've got friends who've got little boys and they've got sisters, so they want to yeah. dress up in the fairy outfits and that's yeah. okay. But that doesn't necessarily mean that,
no.
you know, they want to change gender.
No,
or,
of course
you
not.
Know,
like, you don't
even
have to
as
put
a
kids
teen.
In a box like that. You just let them like, express themselves.
Is
and
this your
they'll
mission right
out.
Now is to yeah. share this? Because although we're talking about, you know, changing gender as a main yeah. topic, and that's what a lot of the content that you're putting out there is, it's actually something so much greater than that.
Yeah, like if you watch a lot of my content, I see a lot of what I talk about. My message is about the fact that we are all in transition all the time. So whether, you know, I'm transitioning gender, you're leaving a job, you're leaving a relationship, you're ending a marriage, you're moving country, you're coming from being a professional athlete, you're leaving prison, you're coming out of the military. Our lives are constantly, whether it's big
change.
Or small, they're constantly in transition, trying to adapt to change. And it's about looking yourself in the mirror, finding out what the actual pain point is, what is stopping you from being happy, and doing the scary things and doing the hard things in life to get where you want to be. And that's my message. Like you are the revolution you're waiting for. Like I spent 27 years looking for something and I found it in myself. And people are terrified of living a life true to themselves. Like it is the most common regret people say on the deathbed. I wish I'd have lived a life more true to myself.
Oh, that's in Bronnie Ware's book.
Do you know what?
Top five. Have you ever read that book?
Who?
So there's she was an end-of-life care nurse, a lady called Bronnie Ware, Australian. There's a book called The Top Five Regrets of the Dying, she decided, which I've got so much respect for anyone who can, you know, be caring for people with terminal illnesses or coming to the end of their life. And she decided what she would do, collate. She would make something good come from these awful situations. Yeah. And so she asked people their top five regrets, their top regrets, and she collated the top five. And one of those five, top five regrets of the dying books called exactly that by Bronnie Ware is, I wish I'd lived a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me.
Yeah.
So you are carrying on this mission. Now, there will be people who pigeonhole what you do and what your mission is, because like you just mentioned, you know, we're going to go all the way through the whole prison service. You mentioned the military, etc. But right now you have just left your job. You have decided that you are making this huge leap into a world where effectively there's no job title for this, is there?
No.
You know, what's your job title? Oh, I'm out there trying to get my mission to the world that you live a life true to yourself. But there will be people who pigeonhole you and say, well, the message you're sharing is only relevant to people who are currently one gender and want to be another.
How
then do you overcome that challenge? Because a lot of the content that you're talking about is around that, because that's your transition. So how are you going to overcome that?
I think because I obviously go around the country now and work and tell my story to people and companies and stuff like that. Because my transition doesn't just affect me. It affects everyone around me. And it then affects everything that they're going through. And because I've got a story where I've been through so many transitions, you know, whether that's leaving the military or being in the prison service and affecting so many other people's transitions in terms of prisoners and how that's inspired them to stop self-harming, stop taking drugs, change their life, you know, realize it's not too late. All of those things brings people into a zone of listening to a story that relates to them in some way, in every aspect. Like, it's not about gender. And I think people get that from me quite quickly, because I'm not someone who wants to be in a box. I'm not someone who only wants to talk about that, because I don't believe it's about that. I think it's about living a truly authentic life.
So this is a potential challenge that you'll face, because it's like you get known for one thing. So I teach public speaking. We talk all about story and how everyone's got a story inside of them, and a fact will tell people things, but a story will sell the idea to people. Yeah. And the whole hero's journey, every film that you've ever watched is a hero's journey. Every song, as you know, starts one way as the crescendo and then comes back down. Yeah. And we talk all about this. But I love the fact that you're probably overcoming a bigger challenge than most, because you want this message to be, look, this is about living a life true to yourself.
Your truth.
But there will always be the people who go, oh, well, this is Jack. So I think you've got a bigger challenge in that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's a big mission to take on. You know, you're going into businesses and talking about transition. If we remove the whole gender transition, and we were just talking about transition, there are people who make their living by being change management professionals. Mm. They'll go into a business, they'll talk about, oh, you're in this department and you're moving to this one. You know, we're moving from this type of pay scale to this one, and that's acceptable. But what you're doing, for many people, that's not acceptable. Now, I am a firm believer that everyone should do, be, and have whatever they want to do. Everyone should do, be, and have whatever. And how someone else is living their life is never going to affect you. And when you do, like, why do people get so worried about it? We've just been talking with a previous guest before this one. We're talking about, you know, how one person being vaccinated, everything is so divided.
Yeah.
There's the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. There's the, you know, the workers and the scum of the earth who live off it. And I love bringing people together. And I think that's something that you're aiming to do. But obviously there's going to be, you know, certain different groups of people who will automatically be turned on or turned off by what you're talking about. So I definitely want us to touch upon that and how you're going to overcome those obstacles. But I'm going to backpedal a little bit, because we talked about, you know, going from the age of 4 or 5, realizing you had these affirmations, these little phrases in your head that now you look back, were actually you telling yourself it's going to be all right. You continued in that vein as Jess, living life as a girl, and you got to 14, wanted to, so again, looking back, you now know you were looking for a way out of something that wasn't, didn't actually need to get away from. So you have always been Jess to your parents. You got siblings as well?
Yeah, brother and sister.
A brother and a sister. Tell us about how you then go from being this 14-year-old female in school, wanting a bit of a change, and then how do we go from that to actually, I'm a different person trapped inside of this body?
So as I started to grow up into like my late teenage years, I started to really, really try to be that girl from Wigan. You know, going out in a dress and tall heels and, you know, hair long down my back and trying to dress like everybody else and trying to have boyfriends and trying to, you know, trying so much to just be Jess. Mm-hmm. I tried so hard to be Jess. Like, I did not want to. I didn't know at the time either, but the only thing I ever wanted was to make my mum and dad proud. And I believed that if I made them proud, that would make me happy. And so that's what I always strived for. And as I started to go into those late teen years, I started to really struggle with my mental health. And I started to become really anxious and struggling with my friendships and things like that, because I was becoming more anxious as a person, but I was also starting to question my sexuality, to being attracted to women. Mm-hmm. And at the time, obviously, like at 18 years old, I didn't know any gay women in Wigan. And there was just like a real sort of year or two where I was probably not really nice to be around for my mum and dad. And I didn't want anyone to look at me when I went home. And I think about these things now and I think, no wonder you didn't, like, you hated yourself.
Yeah.
You hated the image that Jess was. And I started to really struggle in that way. And I was working in a gym at the time and I made the decision to join the RAF at 19. And I'd always wanted to, like, go into the police and stuff. And if I was busy and I was physically active and I was mentally challenged, I was fine. Mm-hmm. So when I obviously joined the RAF, that like transformed me immediately. You know, for me and my family, everyone thought,
she's found it.
This is it. Yeah, like we've cracked it here.
So how did your family take it when you went from, you know, working in the gym, what age are we here? 18,
yeah,
late 18. Teens, 18, 19, and then decide, you know, because you're breaking that news to family members. I know, I remember one of my nephews, actually, one has turned 30 today. One of my nephews saying, I'm going to go, he was in the TA, I'm going to go and join the army. And my sister, being the person that cheers, was like, you can't on account of your bad legs. And he's like, oh my God, what's wrong with my legs? She said, I'm going to break them if you go in there because you're not leaving me. And so that was a thing that was never going to happen. You're never joining the military. You know, you're my son and you're my baby and you're staying here. How did your family take it? Were they expecting it because you'd always wanted to go into the police?
Yeah, or? I mean, they knew that I was a tomboy. They knew that I was really sporty. They knew that I was incredibly fit. I was motivated. I was determined, you know, although I struggled with my mental health, in terms of like myself and social situations, stuff like that, I was determined like to be good at something. And obviously there was the fear, but my mum and dad, you know, we've always had such a close relationship as a family. I've got the most amazing family. And it was one of the reasons I was really hard on myself for having my bad mental health, because Jess had no reason to be sad.
So you actually beat yourself up over it. How dare you feel sorry for yourself when you've got a nice life and
because
a nice family?
I had
family.
Everything. Like, I had all the love that I could ever want. I had amazing family, I had amazing friends, I had everything.
And that must have been really difficult to deal with, especially because, you know, being a teenager, irrespective of your gender, is not fun. Let's be honest.
No.
Most people
no.
don't enjoy that time.
Yeah.
One question I do want to ask here, though, is, do you think that fitness, exercise, you know, the thing that releases natural endorphins, do you think that helped with your mental health problems?
So obviously in relation to the military, it did in school, obviously, because that's what I focused on. But so they were amazing with that, with me going into the military, because they thought that this would sort me out too, you know, and it would be something that I was really proud of and stuff. And it did. Like, the moment I joined, you know, I was in a uniform. I didn't have to think about what to wear. I didn't have to think about who Jess was. I was in this stereotypical masculine uniform. You know, I was constantly flying all over the world. I was constantly training. I was constantly just engrossed in this world. I was suddenly surrounded by all of these independent, powerful, strong gay women, you know, who were just like me. You know, they didn't dress really masculine and they didn't dress really feminine. They were just themselves.
You found your people.
Yeah. And I was just like, oh my God, like this is who I am. Like,
oh, you found like really like, felt like you fitted in.
Yeah. Like, and I, you know, and I can obviously come out for the first time.
But, hold on, we need to stop there. Come out for the first time. So it was only actually at the age of 18, 19 that you then started questioning your sexuality. Although you'd mentioned, you know, at the age of 14, you kind of, this was the point where it was like, all of these, you know, really strong, independent women, and, you know, typically or very, you know, there's a huge...
Yeah, because I spent, like, say, 16 to 18 trying to be this straight, girly, like, woman something from Wigan. And then, like, 18, 19, I started to, like, struggle with it. And I joined the RAF and it just smacked me in the face. And I was like, oh, Christ. But I didn't know any gay women in Wigan then. But I felt empowered by all these people, and I just knew who I was then. And obviously I was terrified to come out the first time. Absolutely terrified. I was like, oh my God. And I was sat and I was like squeezing my sister's hand, like crying, like 19 years old, gathered them around the dining room table. Like she took a picture of me squeezing her hand and I had it tattooed on me. Cause it was just like a really significant moment. I was terrified.
Oh, wow.
And then my dad was just like, you gay, aren't you?
I
was just like, yeah, I'm sorry. But they were like, we know, we've known for you, you know, they knew before me in that sense that I was gay, that I was a gay woman. And so that coming out process was fantastic. And we discussed it all and it was fine. Obviously I did it again 10 years later, but
hold on, there's 10 years
yeah,
that we need to
we're not going to that yet, but obviously that coming out was great.
So they knew before you did. Was that a relief? Was that like,
yeah,
of course, now I found my place in the world?
Yeah, we all thought we've cracked it here. You know, the military and the uniform, it made me stand tall. It made me stand proud. It gave me this identity. It gave me this, I've always been really like, secure and confident in a uniform, even to this day. Like, it was terrifying to walk away from it because prior to transitioning, if I had a day off and I weren't getting up and putting a uniform on, I didn't know what to do with myself. Like, my head would fall off. Whereas if I finished work at dinner time, I could go and be as productive as anything in my uniform, you know, and go shopping and do all of
this.
Isn't
that really interesting? So, because
I didn't have to be Jess.
Yeah. So this is where, like, we talk about, I have conversations with people at part of my, like, get in state, because I was a proper tomboy growing up.
Yeah.
And this is where I'm so intrigued by all of this, because you were a tomboy and that was because that was the path you were destined for. I was a tomboy because I used to play with the boys at school. I like football, I climbed trees. I've got scars all over my legs from falling over all of the time, you know. My hair was always scraped back really tight in a bun out of the way.
Yeah. It still feels like it is sometimes for me, you know. I still feel it.
I find this really interesting. I bet you don't miss doing your hair.
Do I? No.
God, I've got naturally wavy hair, like the biggest ball ache in the world. You know, just drying your hair. So, but I also, as part of my whole get in state, get ready to get on a stage, part of my being me and the stage persona is I'll always put heels on, I'll always put lipstick on. That's part of my get in state. And yours was the flip side, was the level of comfort was I'm in a uniform.
Like body armour.
It's like, it's not gendered. Mm. It's authority. Was it an authority? And you've got, you found your place, you know, a uniform signifies that you've got.
I felt good. I felt strong. I felt like you can handle anything. You know what?
However.
But yeah.
So how long did that then continue? You were just, because, you know, when you think about it, there's got to be a book later down the line, hasn't there?
Well,
you
see, I've left like a right one. Yeah, I've got a right one.
Definitely got a right one, because you are, or have been, the experiences that you've had in your life, and you're like, you're what, like 28, 29? You're 30. So, you make me feel old. So at the age of 30, you have been Jess, the heterosexual female. Then you've been Jess, the gay female.
Yeah.
And now you are, do you prefer Jax or Jackson?
Either or.
Okay. Jax, we're mates now. and now you are Jax, who is, identifies as male.
Yeah.
You've had some surgeries.
Yeah.
But not all. Are you finished?
I don't know.
Ah,
I don't
okay. know. So you're always in transition. You're literally living your motto, always in transition.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get onto that later.
You've experienced more in 30 years than many people would. And, you know, is this about you sharing that strength? Because my kids go to school and, you know, they are taught so many different things. And I am a firm believer that kids should be taught that they can be, do and have whatever they want. But in my world, in their world, there are, you know, there are two genders. You are male and you are female, and you can choose which one you want to be. And they understand that. There's so many TV programs, there's so many things that they, you know, so much they see on social media. And my 9-year-old is like, oh yeah, we were talking yesterday. And he said to me that one of the girls in his school, she's so into football and she's so good at football. And he was like, yeah, she wants to be a boy. And I said, well, she actually said that. Or are you just making that assumption? And he went, no, she said she wants to be a boy because she has to play football on a girls' team and she doesn't want to. She's better than all of the girls. She wants to play as a boy. And I thought, see, this is where it's really confusing for kids.
Yeah.
Because she wants to play on a boys' football team, but does that mean, and should her parents, you know, how does, because I want there to be lessons for people listening to this podcast. You know, there's going to be parents out there who have children that were born one gender, want to be another, et cetera.
The parents.
How does someone deal with that?
The response that I get from parents, like, that's why I do this more. Mm. Like, I do, obviously I do it for
to
trans
help the individuals.
People. But the parents... is just because there isn't anything for
there's
parents.
No handbook, and, there's no guidebook,
you know,
for it.
I mean, I could talk about my parents, but it depends if you want to skip to...
Not yet. Okay. No, patience.
We'll talk about parents then.
We'll talk about parents later, but that's part of it. Because this is, you know, my fear is kids are going to be really confused.
Yeah.
And I am all for, I am a firm believer that you can do be and have anything you want in
but
life.
But the boxes, like, stop. My opinion is, right, have the education there. For a start... Teaching them about gender identity is not teaching them about sex, so calm down. Teaching them about gender identity...
Well, they need to be taught about sex
just,
as well. It's,
well,
it's
a, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, people just think they're the same thing. teaching them about gender identity is not going to change them in any way. What we have to stop doing is telling kids that they have to pick and they have to decide right now. It's okay to change. It's okay to change your mind. It's okay to feel differently. You don't have to put yourself in a box. Like, as long as anyone... child, student, employee, friend, if someone feels loved and safe and accepted, they will thrive. So just let them grow up and express themselves. And if they want to play with that toy, play with that toy. If they want to dress like that, dress like that. They just let them be themselves. And if they feel comfortable and safe around you to do so, they will figure it out and it'll save them a hell of a lot of years, unlike me, because they will not, they'll just figure it out and there'll be no pressure and they won't feel terrified to tell you that they want to do that.
But this is the challenging thing, is that you as a child, wave very loved. Do you think it's because there is
the visibility?
Yeah.
And that's another thing that I'm aiming to be.
Yeah.
Like, every single person in this country will know what a trans man is, what a transgender person is, and what it means in the right way, because there's too many people putting out the wrong message too.
Okay, so this I definitely want to touch upon. So we'll pause that one as well. I'm conscious. I'm going down a timeline. Bear with me. So we're going to touch upon parents and we're going to touch upon the right way and the wrong way, because there are people, irrespective of what their message is, there are people out there, you know, who are spouting, this is the right way, this is the only way, this, that, and the other. So we'll definitely touch upon that as well. So now, you then came out as...
I love that you're enjoying this conversation.
I'm
it's nice.
Yeah. I just think there's people can have...
You just look happy,
everyone
I like
everyone listening can have an opinion, and everyone is entitled to their opinion. That's okay. But the reason I want to host this podcast is it's educational for people. And they can, you know, there'll be people who go, I love Jack's love, what he's all about, I love the message that he's sharing, where can I find out more?
Yeah.
There will be other people, as you well know, and you must have experienced this, where they've kind of gone, we're teaching kids the wrong things. And, you know, I heard recently they were teaching children, it was a friend of mine who said that, oh, their child's being taught that there are 75 different genders. That's not physically possible in my world. They're not different genders. In my world, you are either male or you are female, or you are transitioning between the two. So there are three. And that, that's my opinion right now.
Yeah.
But then how are the 75? Because, you know, they're not genders. It might be the way that you live the life. It might be a label that is attached to it. Because let's be honest, 9 times out of 10, it's a label that's attached to it.
I think the labels just need to... I mean, I don't know what all those genders are. Do you know what I mean? I can only ever speak from my own experience. And no doubt you will get grief. You will have amazing comments and you'll get shit for having me on. Because, sorry, can I swear on this podcast?
Oh, God, yeah. It's punctuation where we're from.
You will get shit for having me on this podcast.
Absolutely.
You know, like, I'm not listening to your podcast anymore, Tony, because you've had him on, or you've had, you know, her on, and he thinks he's he, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, we've got to have this
people
conversation
tell me to
too.
Kill myself every day.
Really?
Or I need electrocuting, or I need this, blah, blah, blah. But...
Have they seen how much electricity costs these days? Are they... Honestly, I live in a world
where... there's
always
going to be those people. And my aim is, I don't have a go at someone at all. I never have a go at anybody. But I'll touch your emotion.
See, this is what I really like, is that you are wanting to do... We're talking about the right way. You want to educate people to understand. Yeah. They don't have to agree with you.
No,
they don't. Well,
no,
we've
they
just
don't,
been talking
because...
about, you know, we had a conversation. I'm not vaccinated. I'm not ramming it down people's throats that they should, you know, I'm not a massive anti-vaxxer. But also when I'm having conversations with people, I'm saying, are you aware that the vaccination you had has done X, Y, and Z? So I'm doing the same thing in a different, but I'll get grief in one way because of that. You'll get grief in another way. You know, if someone says that you should invest in property, you'll have to, I'm the scum of the earth because I'm taking those houses away from first time buyers. And I think unless you're willing to stand up and stand out, as long as you're standing up for what you believe in, standing against what you don't do, and have whatever you want to be. Like we can all live in the
person,
world.
I'm all for you. If you're a bad person, if you're a bad person, I'm not. Trans or not. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly,
like it's not. It's we have to allow people time to learn and grow and make mistakes and ask questions. And
this is what I love about what you're sharing, is that you are trying to educate people
in the right way. Yeah, because like if I just have a go at someone, people are terrified of getting in trouble or getting sacked or getting upsetting someone or whatever. If someone makes a genuine mistake, because 99% of the time it's not malicious, and I just go mad, that person's just going to be like, they're just going to retreat and go, I don't want to have this conversation.
Do you not want to go mad at those people who are malicious though?
Oh yeah, of course. Like if I can give someone the information, like say if you make a mistake and I go, oh, you shouldn't really say that, you know, or like whatever, that's not really right, or that would upset someone.
Yeah.
And then they go away and they change the mindset. That's fantastic. I've changed the mindset.
Yeah, but if they go,
but if they
the
want to continue being an asshole, they're an asshole. Like, there's not that. That's all I can do. But
that's irrespective
someone,
of the subject matter.
When
isn't
someone
it?
Comes at me, there's no need for me to argue back online, because in 5 years' time, you'll come back to my content and thank me for what I'm doing because it'll affect someone you love.
And this is the why I love that you're willing
lack of
to
understanding,
stand up and stand
because it's
stand.
Never affected their life. Like when someone says, "Oh, well, you're not, you're this, you're that." Okay, what happens when it's your for me, it was a dead daughter or a living son.
Okay, so that's something that
so
is...
So what is it when it's your child?
Exactly. Okay, we need to... We're jumping ahead again.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. This is the way my mind works. We've just been having a chat with Anthony as well. I'm like 99%
certain
I've got
ADHD. This should be like a five-hour podcast.
I think this
I'm annoyed that I have
fun.
To go.
So we've then moved from... you were... in the RAF, you were in the military.
Yeah.
You felt like you were in your happy place. You found your place.
Yeah.
But then, what happened then? Where was the, how long were you happy for? What was the changing point?
It filled the void for 4 years. I was in for 4 years. And what happened was, I was on a tactical unit and I was flying all over the world. I was never in one place for more than a few days.
But that was a good thing for you because it kept you busy.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And then I started playing a lot of rugby, and they're really big on the sports scene in the military, and they'll push you towards that to you know, play professionally and stuff. Mm-hmm. I started playing semi-professional rugby, and they wanted me to play more rugby. So I got, so that I could play more rugby and be closer to a civilian team, I got posted to a different base doing a different job. So I became an intelligence analyst, which effectively put me on a desk to play more rugby, which I thought, yeah, it's fantastic. I'll just play rugby. When really, I was playing rugby twice a week.
Oh, wow.
So
what did that mean? You
I had to sit with Jess. So within weeks of being in that job,
that quick?
I started to become really depressed really quickly. Because I had to sit with Jess. Like I could not focus my mind. Like I could not, and I still didn't know what it was. I was just depressed and I was anxious and I wasn't busy enough and I wasn't challenged and I wasn't, and that's what I thought I needed, you know. So
with hindsight, do you think you were always just running away?
Yeah.
You were always just running away.
I just needed to be busy because the feeling there was a lack of belonging in myself. That feeling, that internal feeling of you're not comfortable. You are not comfortable. I just could not settle.
Could your parents and your siblings see this too? Did they see this?
Yeah, they knew that I struggled with mental health. My mum knew that I'd considered taking my own life. Like I really like struggled with it and it started to get worse. And what happened was I got sent on tour, and which was a good thing at the time, you know, because it got me away from the desk. Yeah. And I went on tour for 4 months, and whilst I was on tour, I was still sort of struggling to an extent, and I made the decision to come out of the RAF and leave the military, which was massive, like for me and my family, because we thought I'd be in there forever. Like we genuinely thought that we'd cracked it.
What made you want to leave when that was the place you'd felt you belonged? And because you were back on tour then, you were busy again?
Because I was depressed. I'd just lost the joy in everything. Wow. Like I'd filled the void, and it had gone out. It had ended,
yeah,
so to speak. Like it had ran out. So I was just in a state of like depression then, and I was having conversations and with mum and dad whilst I was away and stuff. And I just realised I just needed to be with my mum. Like I just needed to be with my mum. I wasn't okay. I wasn't myself. There was something missing, and I just knew that I had to go home. And I made the decision to put my notice in. And when you're in the military, you have to give a year's notice. So
it's a hefty time to have a long thought process about it.
So I put my notice in, and then a few months later, I came back home. And obviously, you're a bit mixed up anyway when you come like back off anything like that. But I came back, and I didn't leave my mum's side for about 2 months.
Like, is that because it felt safe?
I couldn't stop crying. I couldn't look at anybody. I went, like, she was a mobile hairdresser. I went hairdressing with her. I went everywhere she went. Like, I couldn't look at anybody. I couldn't have anyone look at me. I just could not stop crying. And eventually I finally went to the doctors, and I ended up, you know, taking antidepressants and stuff. And that's what I still thought it was.
Yeah.
And I sat down with her one day, and this was like the first time I'd actually thought about it. And I said to her, is it because I want to be a boy?
You asked your mum this?
Yeah. I said, is that why I'm so depressed? And she was like, no, like, of course not. You know, you're this beautiful, athletic. Because all through my life, you see, I'd always been called a man. So like, even though I didn't look.
So I've seen, and what I love is that you've left all of your pictures of Jess, because that,
yeah, you know, with
Jess
me.
Was
she's
a part of your life.
Me, yeah,
she,
yeah.
It was you. You were not remote, like you were a
yeah. So like
a
in
very
school,
girl.
In pubs, like in school, I used to get it if I fell out with someone, or like the lads in school would be like, "Oh, why are you friends with Jess? She's a man." There must have been, yeah. Like I'd be in a pub at 18, short dress, tall heels,
long hair,
her down to my bum, and people come up to me in the pub like, "You bloke." I'd get kicked out of women's toilets. I get shouted at, being like, "This is a woman's toilet." Da da da, and it used to break my heart. It used to break my heart because. It's you know, and it sounds daft now because that's obviously who I am, but I didn't want to be a man who looked like a woman. I didn't want to be a woman who looked like a man. I just wanted to be myself. Like I just wanted to feel comfortable. I just wanted to feel like I fit in, and it just used to break me. Like it used to devastate me because I just thought it's so embarrassing. Like it's so shameful. It's like, why would you do that to someone? And so obviously that had happened throughout my life.
Is that why you then asked your mum there? Because
yeah.
So many people had kind of pushed this upon you and gone, oh,
basically,
you're...
yeah.
Wow. But at that point, you still had no idea.
And obviously, I started thinking that I'd had those thoughts as well. But I still didn't really think that was it. And I asked her, and she was like, no, like, you're this beautiful, athletic woman. You know, she used to call me Miss Congeniality. She's like, you wouldn't be you if you weren't, you know, that's how she saw me. She was like, you're this tough, gorgeous woman. Like, you wouldn't be you if you weren't Jess. Like, everyone loves you, your life and soul, the party, you know, because that's who I was. Mm. And that's kind of what we both believed in that moment. And she says now, if I'd have said, yeah, Jess, like, you know, you should have been a boy. And you'd have then gone, right, I'll do it because my mum said, and then it was the wrong decision. She'd have never forgive herself.
So did she, now that you've spoken to her afterwards,
I think she questioned,
did she think
I think
at
she questioned
point,
it back
actually,
then, yeah.
Maybe.
I think she questioned it back then because she knew I was...
God, the pressure on a parent to then be... Because we all look up to our parents so much, and I lost my mum at 21.
Mm.
And when you'd said, I just want to be with my mum, I'm
40.
No,
yeah.
It's all right, you didn't do it.
No, but that's...
But at the age of 40... I can cope with most things, but physically being sick, I can't cope with. And I still want my mum.
Yeah.
And so that I want my mum at the end of, you know, your tours and being in the military, I totally get.
She's just the only person that made me feel safe.
But the pressure for a mum being a mum.
Yeah.
Of your child saying, is it because of this? And she didn't have the answer. She didn't know one way or the other.
She said it had to come from you.
But the pressure of knowing that if she'd have said this and it was wrong, or if she'd have said that, because ultimately... Mm. What she said to you is, no, it's not that case. And lo and behold, that was actually wrong.
Yeah.
But it was
I think
the easier option
of
wrong.
I think that's what
we
both did believe in that moment. And she knew that if that was it, it did have to come from me. And I wasn't ready to accept that then. And
So this was still age 19, 20?
No, no. So this was like after my military career. So this was
After military, of course. So this was 24.
Like 24, yeah. So so we had that conversation and I buried it. And then luckily I came out of the military earlier than planned because I got a job in the prison service, which like got me out a little bit earlier.
So what made you apply for the prison service?
I applied for the prison service whilst I was on tour when I put my notice in because I needed something to come out to. And I felt like I was born to be in uniform, obviously. And I was, so to speak, you know, I'm incredibly proud of both of them. It gave me everything. It gave me a hell of a lot of my identity. You know, it's something that I didn't want to walk away from. I've served for the last 10 years of my life.
And the comfort of being in a uniform and, again, and not having to be, am I Jess or am I Jack?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's something that I absolutely love. And, well, I forgot what we were talking about then. What was the question?
We were talking about the change. What made you apply for the prison service?
Oh, yes. So that's why.
And you got to leave the military a little bit earlier than your four years.
Yeah. So, so I buried that conversation. I got my job. And
was it just another thing to keep you busy?
Yeah. It was a brand new uniform, brand new people. Prison is different every day. You know, like you wear everything to those prisoners. I had a backbone because I'd come from the military. I had banter. I could give it, you know, I was
a
feisty.
But that in itself must have been tough being at that point in time, a female prison officer. I'm presuming you were predominantly.
Well.
It's like, go on, there are only so more challenges to deal with.
Just love it, don't I? So, love making my life hard.
Setting you up for where you are now, that's what it was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
But that in itself, were you in male-only prisons, in female-only prisons?
Yeah, no, just
male-only
prisons. So, and I loved it. Like it was the perfect thing to go into because I had life experience, you know, and you need that going into that world. And it just completely filled my cup again. Like I was surrounded by all these new people
and
you're everything to prisoners, your mum, dad, therapist, nurse, fireman, policeman, punch bag, you know, shoulder to cry on, everything,
so
every
that
day.
Kept you really busy as well.
So I was just like, you know, dealing with all these people and all this. And I loved it. And I became a really well-respected prison officer for the first couple of years and I buried that. And then what happened was I had a conversation with someone about mental health about 2 years in, 2.5 years in.
One of the prisoners?
No, it was to a nurse. I was just talking about mental health, just like really casual. And I said something like, I used to have really bad mental health. I used to think I wanted to be a man. And I just said it like dead blasé. Like, yeah, I've dealt with that.
Did you want to like claw it back when you'd said it?
I said it. I genuinely thought.
Like it was done?
Yeah, I thought I've dealt with that. Like, that's fine. That's what I used to think. And then from that moment, it was just at the forefront of my mind. Like, it was just there. Like, from the moment I had that conversation, and I must have gone home that night and I was like, shit.
You'd open the floodgates.
Yeah, like I'd brought it back up and I hadn't even thought about it.
Wow.
And from that moment, I started to delve into the YouTube hole of transgender men. And
did you keep all of this a secret from everyone?
Oh God, yeah. And for about a year. And I used I started to find all these transgender men who were, you know, they were documenting the journey and they were living this life and they were being models and they were doing all these things. And
that must have felt like a lifeline.
And
to
I
you.
Was like, oh my God, like I didn't even know this was a thing. Like I didn't even know it existed. I didn't even know it was possible. Like, you know, you hear things like back then, but I didn't know it was actually like you could actually do that and look like that and transition and all these things.
So was that it?
And I was just stuck in this hole of YouTube. And what I thought initially was, well, I can never do that. I can't do that in a prison.
But did you? Oh,
I can't do that in
Wigan.
Did
you know you wanted to do that?
I started to feel like this is maybe what's wrong with me. But I was like, but I can't do that. So I'll just live vicariously through YouTube, and that'll keep me happy.
How long did you do that for?
I did it for about a year. But what I didn't realize was, because nobody else knew, my partner at the time, like, I was having like the odd conversation, but. I just thought, I can't do that in prison. I can't do that in Wigan. And I can't do that to my family. So there's not a chance in hell I'm going to do that. But I'll just keep watching these videos. And I started educating myself loads and like really relating to these people. And I started to become really jealous of them. And I started to look at it and be like, I should be doing that. Like, I should be living that.
It's not fair.
Like, I could do that. I could be, you know, a model. I could do all the things I'm doing now. I was like, I could do all that. And what I didn't realize was the more I was starting to understand and accept myself, the angrier with the world I was becoming. Yeah. And when you're in a prison environment and you're acting like that, you start to put yourself in very dangerous situations. And when I look back now at my actions and how I was on the prison landing, I was absolutely suicidal.
So what were your actions? You were angry at your prisoners. You were fuming at life.
So I was quite feisty anyway. Like, anyone who describes Jess, you're like,
you wouldn't have took any shit from anyone.
Yeah. Like very ready to go. And I just turned into someone who I just wanted to fight. I would go mad at prisoners for everything, and I would just lose my head, and I'd be like in hidden places, you know, like on a landing where no one could see me, and I'm arguing with a prisoner. I could be getting my head kicked in, you know, and I just did not care. I was just like,
just my thinking straight.
And I wouldn't have any patience, and I have such a short fuse, and I got, this went on for about, I don't know, 6 months maybe. And I think people started to lose respect for me as a prison officer, which I didn't know. Like, at the time, I just thought I was the only one doing my job right.
And, complete sense of denial. They're all shit at their
you're all
job.
Shit. You're all not doing your job. Like, I'm the only one doing this. And I got pulled into the office by my governor at the time. And she said, I've had several complaints about you from staff and from prisoners. And she read this complaint out to me from a prisoner who was like twice the size of me. I'd had a few run-ins with him. And this complaint said, if I could choose between being in a shark tank with a shark or being on the prison landing with Jess Feely, I'd pick the shark tank every time.
Wow.
And I heard this and I was like, what?
But were you still at the really angry point? So you lost your shit again?
I was like, you're joking. I was like, and you're believing this? Like, from a prisoner? I'm like, I'm one woman. You think I'm terrorizing 100 men? Like, are you joking? Like, you've got people who don't do the job right. You've got people who run away from incidents, and you're pulling me in here saying I need a mentor when a year ago you were telling me I'm fantastic and you want me to help other people. I was absolutely...
You not saw any change in yourself
roof.
Either.
No, yeah, like, hit the roof, stormed out her office. Like, she jokes at me now. She's like, took my door off me injuries, blah, blah, blah. And I stormed out and I went back to the wing and I broke down. Completely broke down because I knew that I had to face my own shit.
Out?
I just knew that I weren't all right. And I was just done. I was like, I'd reached a point where I didn't want to die, but I didn't want to live anymore.
But you also didn't 100% understand. You just knew that you wanted this life that you'd seen on YouTube.
I was just in a really bad place, and I just thought, I'm done. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. Like, I just knew. And she called me back in the next day, and I was like a little bit upset, and she like really beats herself up for this now, but she was like, what's up? Like, what is it? What's going on? Like, tell me. Because I was like, there is something, but I can't tell you right now. And she beats herself up for not pushing
hard.
But I would never have told her, because my family were the most important thing. And I said to her, I was like, there is. I said, but I just can't tell you right now. And she was like, we'll get you out. We'll put you where you want to work, blah, blah, blah.
There's very few people in a work environment who would react in that way. I was a HR manager for 12 years. A lot of the time it was, you've acted in this way, there's repercussions. Because when you say she tells you now, are you still friends with, what was your governor then? You're really lucky that you had someone there, but that still didn't help the situation that you were in, where you were stuck.
And I'm like, there's no point beating yourself up, because I would never have told you, you know. And she's there being like, we'll help you, we'll do this, we'll get you a mentor. And I'm just thinking, yeah, I'm going off sick.
You already knew in your head.
Like, I'm done.
Yeah.
And
so you promised to go off sick and never go back?
Yeah, I went off sick. I didn't tell anybody anything. I just went off sick.
Did you tell your family when you went off sick?
So I knew that I had to tell them. No, I knew that I had to tell them.
Right.
Like, I knew that I was done at the prison, because never in a million years would I transition in a prison.
The scary, wow.
Like, the most volatile, dangerous place in the world, and add another protective characteristic to your back? No. Like, so
you were already a female in a male environment, a gay female at that, and you'd already got to overcome those challenges. And in your mind, this was just a step too far.
I couldn't do that. But I knew I had to tell mum and dad, because I knew that throughout my life, despite mental health struggles, despite anything, I have always been so motivated, and I've always loved the quote and said to everyone who I've come across, when it feels scary to jump, that's exactly when you jump. Otherwise, you stay in the same place your entire life. And it was my time to take my own advice. And I knew full well that if I didn't do this, I was going to die.
You were actually at the point where you were ready to take your life.
Yeah, like I didn't want to die, but I didn't want to be here. And I knew that, right, well, it's either I do this or I die. So for the last 3 years, everything that I have done has been, well, I do this or I die.
So how then do you sit your parents down and have that conversation? Because in their eyes, you're just still just their daughter who's come out once, yeah. And, you know, but knew that you still had mental health problems. It must have been really difficult for the family, because anyone who's struggling with mental health, you want to help them, but no one knew how to help you. So how did you have that conversation?
I sat them down again, and they obviously knew I had something to tell them. You know, I caused carnage once a year anyway.
This was a regular occurrence.
Like, whatever I was doing, whatever impulsive thing. But obviously they knew I had something, because I'd sat them down 10 years earlier. And they started guessing again. So my dad was like, you're pregnant.
I was like, from the truth.
No.
Next.
You're getting a puppy. I was like, no. You fancy men again? I was like, no. And then my dad, and I can only describe my dad as a blonde Peter Kay. like that's how he talks. That's his mannerisms. Like, that's who he is. Like, he makes himself laugh. He comes out with all, you know.
He just makes himself laugh.
That's just, you know, like, that's just how he is. Yeah. And he said it as a complete joke. Complete joke. He just went, you're not having a sex change, are you? Like, joking. Completely joking. And I'm sat there and I was just like, shit. I was like,
the silence answered.
I was like, I can feel it now in me. I was like, yeah, I am. Like, I was terrified, and his face just lost all colour so quick. Like, the atmosphere and the everything in that room just changed, and the only person who had like a slight inkling was my mum. And even she says now, you know, you saw the video this morning. She was like, it was still being like slapped across the face, because she realised then, like, oh my God, like, Jess has reached a point now where if she doesn't do this, like, when she's not going to be here anymore.
And you said that phrase earlier on where you said, say it again for
dead
me.
Dead daughter or living son, yeah.
Is that how you put it to them?
Not initially. I did say that. I did say, like, I didn't want to be here anymore and stuff like that. And
how did your dad take that? Because your mum, I mean, yeah.
They all took it right bad. Like, my mum.
So
my,
were your siblings there?
My
at the
sister
same time
was
as
devastated
well?
Because she didn't know, and we're so close. And she didn't know how close I was to taking my own life. Like, devastated her.
So when you're saying that they were devastated, it was more the devastation that you'd gone through this for so long on your own and felt this way. Not the devastation of, oh God, we've lost Jess.
The impact, this is why I'm so passionate about it, because the thing that hits parents when you tell someone like that is fear.
Yeah.
It's immediate fear, you know, the abuse you're going to get, how you're going to live, what you're going to do. You know, trans people's existence is questioned constantly within the media and all these things, and, you know, how much danger you're going to be in. And my dad and my brother, like, their first reaction was, well, we're going to have to leave Wigan. I'm going to end up punching everybody. Because they just thought I was going to get abused, and, you know, all those things. And my mom is like, we've been through, you know, upset and anger and confusion and all these things. And we butted heads, like, especially me and my dad, like, we butted heads for, you know, a good, like, few weeks, if not longer, because he didn't want to let go of his little girl. Mm. And he didn't get it, and he didn't understand. And he was like, but you've made all these impulsive decisions. What if this is the wrong one? Like, what if you do this now and that's the wrong one?
That's huge, though. It's a huge decision, isn't it?
And I've tried to go into this with the most understanding as possible, because, like I said to you before, it doesn't just affect me. Mm. Like, it affects everyone around me. Like, they gave birth to a daughter. They named that daughter. They had, you know, dreams about that daughter. They've had 28 years of Jess. Mm. Like, that's not just going to go away, and I don't want it to. And we were butting heads so much, and he was like, you'll always be Jess, you know, you'll always be my little girl. And in the end, I had to have that conversation of, look, it's either a dead daughter or a living son. Like, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. Like, I've tried so hard to be Jess. I didn't want to disappoint you. I didn't want to let you down. I didn't want to do this.
I really didn't want to do this.
I didn't want this to be the answer. I've tried absolutely everything to be Jess. I'm not killing her. She's not going away. Like, she's coming with me. I just can't have her be the image anymore. And I don't want to die. So I don't care if you call me she, her, Jess for the rest of my life. I really don't give a shit. All I care about is that you try and that you accept that this is who I am. Because
so that's what you were looking for,
that's all. I just need you to know that this is what I have to do, and that I'm going to do whatever it takes to change people's mindsets, because it should not be this terrifying to just be yourself. And wow. And from that moment, things started to change. And by taking them on the journey with me and explaining to them, you know, every obstacle or everything I'm doing and why I'm doing it, or why that's important, or why that's changed someone, or why that visibility is, why that's so massive. And it's massively transformed them. And obviously...
Has it made you closer?
Oh my God, yeah. Like, unbelievably. And now they've seen the light come back in their child's eyes. Like, they see the person that they know again. Like, they've realised how much that was so right.
Yeah.
Like, that was, you were meant to be Jax. Like, that was so right. You were meant to do all these things that you're doing. And obviously,
that must have been a tough transition, though, because we're talking from,
oh my God,
what age was this where you basically said, it's this or
27.
At 27. So it was only 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there's been a huge change. You know, they've completely accepted that they're fully on board. How were those first, like, few, you know, because there must have been a million questions. I'm putting myself in that position and I'm like, do you want to go through the entire gender reassignment process in terms of surgery? Are we just now calling you Jax? Is this going to be a legal name change? You know, all of these different things.
It was hard. It was, and even from then it was hard. And then obviously I said, right, well, I'm going back to work.
In the prison service?
Yeah. So
what made you change your mind there? Was it that mum and dad and siblings have now accepted you and you then kind of went, okay?
Yeah, I ran off. I moved
when
to
you
Brighton.
Say you moved away. You went to Brighton.
I was still off sick. I hadn't even told anybody. I just told them and I ran off to Brighton, moved to Brighton with my dogs.
Was that you running away again? Like,
I just
can't deal
didn't
with
want anyone to see me in this. Because the thing is, people think that when you come out, you should be happy. But what I didn't realise and what no one else realised was, I've just lost everything that Jess was. Like, I've just lost this ex-military, strong, fit, gay woman identity that I built, rugby playing, you know, all these things that I've built over 27 years. But I didn't know who Jax was yet. And I've told you I'm Jax, so I've got to be Jax now. But I don't know who that is.
So you were back in the confused
and,
phase?
You know, after coming out, that's probably, I was more suicidal than I've ever been.
Really?
Because, and then I'm thinking, but I'm meant to be happy. And you know, yeah, they've had to grieve Jess. I've had to grieve Jess. You know, as much as someone doesn't die, you absolutely have to grieve a person. And so I ran off and I was like, I can't let anyone look at me in this awkward in-between stage. I felt like a freak. I felt like I was like half girl, half man. Like, I did, you
so
know,
what was the
I still
first thing
look
that
the
you
same.
Did?
I
yeah,
still,
this is it.
I just shaved my head.
You just off.
I moved to Brighton and shaved my head. I was like, I just lost the plot.
Anything.
Yeah, I was just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to be. I don't know how to start this. And you want everything straight away, don't you? I just wanted to run off.
You want the baby without the labour pains? You just want to be
Jack. Like,
you
I just wanted to run off and come back looking like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I had to really, really realise very, very quickly that it's about the journey and it's about enjoying that and it's about enjoying every single day. And when I got my head around that, I moved back.
How long were you away for?
A couple of months.
Oh, really?
I moved back, yeah. I realised that I was probably more suicidal. Yeah. I was on my own. No one was coming. And I said I was going to do this. And if I do this, I do it proper. So, like I said, I was going to do this.
Do you think there was ever a fear at that point? Or was there ever a fear where you were like, shit, now it's out in the open. Now I've shaved my head and I've said I'm going to be Jax. Was there ever a point where you kind of went, oh, you know, as a wobble and kind of went, am I doing the right thing?
Yeah, of course. Did. Because I think for the first couple of years, you do.
Yeah.
Because it's massive.
Because it's not just a, you know.
It's not an overnight thing. Yeah. As much as some people think you go to bed and wake up with a beard and a penis, you don't. You know, like,
And I don't know. I know some women who have a decent moustache, I'll be honest.
Yeah, well, I made it.
Obviously, so anyone who met you today or sees your picture on, you know, the talks with Tony, they will just see that I am sat across from this guy that I'm interviewing.
Yeah.
So, you know, can I ask the questions about, because it's a whole process, stuff on hormones what is the physical process? Because you've documented a lot on your socials as well.
Yeah, so basically, obviously my mum's biggest fear when I said I'm going to go back to work was like, well, what's going to stop 5 men dragging you in a cell and raping you and trying to prove you're still a woman? Because you add 10 times more danger, like, to...
I can't believe you went back into
the prison service anyway, and then you add like something else to target on your back, and it was terrifying because I hadn't done anything. I'd just shaved my head. I still look like Miss Feely.
And this must have been so weird because they called you Miss Feely. They didn't call you Jess, which can be, I know a Jess who's a man. So how did they take it? How did your prisoners take it? Do you have any issues?
I didn't mean to not answer your question then, but
don't worry. You and I are both going through, like, this conversation must be so difficult for people to keep track of.
So basically I decided that I was going to go back. I made a video on YouTube. I came out so that the whole prison knew.
Was that just like a get it out of the way in one hit?
Yeah. And I had the most amazing response from it. Oh. And I went back and I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to take everyone on this journey with me and allow people to make mistakes, because it infuriated me that it was so terrifying to just be myself. And although I was terrified, like, that is the scariest thing I've ever done. Like, military, Iraq, you know, whatever, going back into a prison and transitioning is the scary, like, walking back through them gates, the scariest thing I've ever done, but the best thing that I've ever done. And I went back in and I just told everybody, I was like, it's all right to make mistakes and it's all right to ask me questions and just don't avoid me. Like, I'm still Feely. I'm still the same officer. You know, if you make a mistake, that's fine. As long as it's not malicious, like, it's going to happen. And I want people to learn. I want people to feel safe around me. I don't want people to be stepping on eggshells. I don't want people to be worried about getting in trouble. I don't want people to be scared of asking questions. Like, I'll talk about anything.
That's a huge mindset shift, though, from the Jess who ran away to the Jax who's like, bring it on, ask me any questions. What do you think?
Because I realised what I'd always believed in. Like,
feel a bit more of
10 years prior, I had a quote put on my arm from Rocky, which is, do you know the quote?
Which one is it? Not how many times you get hit, how many times you get back up.
So I'd had that on my arm for like 10 years. I'd always believed in it. I'd always loved quotes like that. And I'd realised that that's who I was.
Yeah.
Like, I said that I was going to do this, so I'm going to do it properly. And I worked on, it's called a psychologically informed planned environment, which basically houses prisoners who are very much stuck in the system. A lot of lifers.
Like re-offenders.
They struggle to manage their emotions, maintain the relationships, understand their own trauma, things like that. And we did a lot of groups with them and stuff like that. Very psychological, trying to understand their own behaviour and why they think the way they do and why they act, whatever. And I went back and I sat them down, you know, with the staff that worked on that wing as well, and just spoke to them all about being suicidal, about...
Oh, you just completely opened
vulnerability, you know, about... I bet you're familiar with Brené Brown.
Yes.
And about vulnerability and how, like, we're brought up to believe that being courageous is strong and being vulnerable is weak, and the definition, and all these things, and talk to them about the fact that if you're not putting yourself in the position for it to go really, really wrong, you're not putting yourself in the position for it to go really, really right either.
Yeah, you can live a very safe life.
Because you have to do the hard things. You have to do the scary things. And they were watching me in the most vulnerable position I'd ever been in, that an officer could ever be in front of a load of prisoners. And I was talking to them about it, and it started to make them think, well, if you can do that, like, if you can walk back into a prison and transition and tell all of us about it, then it started to make them realize and find the belief and the courage to realize that it's never too late to change your own life. And it started to really make them think, oh my God. And because throughout the years when I've said, you have to do this, like, this what you're feeling now, this uncomfortable thing, this is what hard feels like. Like, this is what creates growth. This is what creates change. You want to change your life? You do this now. You sit in this now.
But now you're actively
And they
showing
knew
them
that I wasn't bullshitting because they'd watched me do it. And the relationships that are formed with some of those prisoners is unbelievable. Like,
created a better connection.
Yeah, because I don't know if you've heard me say this story before, but I'll say it for your listeners anyway. About a year later, I held a transgender awareness event in the prison. Yeah. And do you want me to tell it?
Yeah, tell it.
And I held it to basically thank the staff and the prison for supporting me through it and being there and all these things. And I had speakers in, and I made a documentary with, like, my governor and the colleagues and my family and all these things. It was like really emotional, really powerful.
It's been cathartic as well for
and,
you.
This is what set me off on this mission, basically. And the only prisoners who were allowed up there were the prisoners off that unit. And there was about 150 members of staff there from like different prisons. My mum came in, my auntie and my sister, to like watch this, all of this, what we'd done. And my mum was under the impression that it was just going to be like a classroom with a few prisoners and stuff. And she walked in.
It's going to be five people.
And it changed my mum like that.
Wow.
But so these prisoners came up, and I had t-shirts made in the colours of the trans flag, white, pink and blue. And they all had a butterfly on the front, and they all had sayings that I live by on the back. So one said unapologetically, be unapologetically you. Another one said, remember who you are. And another one said, feel the fear and do it anyway. And this guy came up to me on the morning of the event, and he's on an IPP sentence, which basically means they don't give them out anymore because it left people so hopeless. So it's effectively a life sentence, what they used to give out. So if someone was kept reoffending or was like a bit of a nuisance and they wasn't changing, they issued an IPP sentence, which basically meant, irrespective of the sentence you get, you cannot leave prison unless you pass a parole hearing. And when you do, you'll be on license forever. So this guy had been, and it just left people very hopeless, especially drug addicts.
Basically just being told that there's no way out, yeah?
Yeah. Unless you really behave and change like that, you're not getting out. So he was sentenced to 2 years, and he's been in 17. And he served his time. And he was, and, you know, used to be a bad man, you know, bad drug addict, fighting with officers, you know, not a very nice person. And throughout, you know, me going back, because he'd only just landed on the unit when I went back, and he massively turned his life around, like through like working with me and the others and all these things. And he came up to me on the morning of the event, and he had this t-shirt on, and he said, I'm going to wear long sleeves under my t-shirt. And I'm thinking, like, it's boiling up there. Why? And he went, well, I've not left the wing in 16 years without long sleeves on, you know. And he had really bad self-harm scars on his arms. And I said to him, like, what does it say on the back of that t-shirt? And he went, be unapologetically you. I said, well, what are we doing? I said, what do we always talk about? I said, there's nothing to be ashamed of. Like, those scars are a reminder that you made it through. Like, those scars are part of your journey. Like, you don't be ashamed of them. You go up there and you show everybody that who you are. Go up there and show everybody that you are a completely different person, that you've completely changed your life around. You go and be proud of that. It's part of who you are. It's part of what you've been through. It's powerful. And he did. And he went up there and he made a speech.
Wow.
Like, about me and about how I didn't realise how I'd saved his life, and that he wasn't ashamed of his scars anymore because it was part of who he was, and in front of everybody. And obviously I left 2 weeks ago, and I'd worked with this guy for 3 years, and he wrote me this letter, and he wrote in it, like, I owe you my life. Wow. Like, I'm clean off drugs because of you. Like, I will never commit crime again because of you. Like, you don't understand how much you've made me want to help other people and inspire other people to be themselves. And there's pictures of me on his wall. Like,
you've had such an impact on his life.
It's just unbelievable. And it breaks me, because I just think, like, that, there's, if I can change prisoners' mindsets, like the people who are less educated, less aware, probably more prone to being against it than anybody else, then there's a way to have this conversation. Like, it's not about not letting people make mistakes, and it's not about expecting people to teach themselves and expecting people to just get it and sort it out. It's not about that, because if you do this in the right way, you can get rid of the gender bit of this conversation, because it's not about that. it's about doing the hard things and doing the things that you really don't want to do to find true happiness. And that's why I'm so passionate about it, because I'm thinking there's a way to have this conversation. You don't even, like, the world doesn't realize that there's a way to talk about this.
You've got a big mission now. So you've just talked about being truly happy. Are you truly happy now?
Oh my God, like, happier than I've ever been. I was talking about this an hour ago. I'm happier every day. Like, I get happier every day. And the moment I realized that it's about enjoying the journey, and it's not about what you achieve, it's about the person you become in the process, I started to enjoy every day. Like, every day I used to look in the mirror and be like, oh, I've got another chinner. You know, like, I knew that it was exciting. Yeah. I knew that I didn't need it all right now. I realized that every day I was going to get better. Every day I was going to become more Jacks. Every day I was going to become better looking. You know, every day I was closer to something else. I was closer to how I wanted to feel and who I wanted to be.
And how you feel you should have been born.
Yeah. And now I've recently left. I keep having these like weird moments of reflection. And I think it's because I've spent the last 3 years trying to survive. That I've never really looked back and gone, oh my God. Like, and I keep having these moments, like, you know, where I'm going tonight, or, you know, I saw a picture of me on stage at Newport Pride the other week, and I was hosting, and people coming up to me being like, you've given me hope for my child, and you've done all these things, and please keep doing what you're doing. You know, you don't, and people knowing who I am, like, it just completely overwhelmed me. I just think, look at the life you've built, like, look what you've done, like, look.
You're proud of yourself.
Like, unbelievably. And it makes me want to shake people. Like, it makes me want to be like, will you just do that thing that you really don't want to do? Because it will change your life. Like, people sit in a life that they believe they're happy in because they're scared to do that thing that they're really, really terrified of, that might not work. But you know what? Like, it might not, but what if it does? Mm-hmm. What if you can actually feel how happy you don't think is possible? What if you can actually feel that? Because you know that feeling, that's how I feel through jumping every
Listen
time.
Listen to the passion in your voice. You're like,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, wake up, because you can live a life that you really want to live if you just look yourself in the mirror and check yourself constantly and go, what is it that I want? What is it that I want to achieve? What am I not doing because I'm scared of what they think? Mm-hmm. Because you can actually feel how you don't even realise it's possible, and it just makes me want to go, will you just do that, please? And so that you can be happy, because
look,
this is...
like, you still are, do that, please.
Do you know what I mean, though? I'm like, just, you are your revolution. Like, be unapologetically you. And it just makes me so passionate about it, because I just think there is happiness there. And I see so many people in unhappy relationships or unhappy jobs or unhappy whatever.
And this has come full circle, because for you, it was about gender, but actually mission and the vision
absolutely
and the
not.
Message that you're sharing
it's
is so much
gender.
Greater in so much as don't live a life of mediocrity.
Yeah.
Don't live a life that others expect of you. Go out there,
like,
do being
I'm not worried. In reply to your point at the beginning, I am absolutely not worried about breaking that little pigeonhole, because I'm not in it. Like, and I won't let anyone put me in it.
Love that. Absolutely love it. Jax, I could sit and talk to you all day, and I know we are constrained by time, so I'm going to ask you one final question.
Sorry,
no, don't apologise.
I don't want to go
we'll
there
get you back
I'm
up
like,
for another
let's
one.
Do more.
I'm going to ask you one
let's
final
hold
question.
Let's hold an event together. Let's just do this.
It's literally what I do. My question to you is, what is the one question no one ever asks but you wish they would? Or what is the one subject matter that no one ever really touches on and you wish they'd speak about more?
To do with me?
In general. I ask this of every guest. It's to make you think, what's the one question, you know, where you're like, oh, so I asked someone this. I've done an interview earlier this week, and I interviewed a multimillionaire who's got a ridiculous business, £120 million worth of property. And he said, the one question no one ever asks me is how much money I make. And I found that really interesting, because that's the thing that we would avoid, isn't it?
Yeah.
We'd avoid asking someone really wealthy, how much do you make? It's uncouth, you know, it's very British. I asked my guest earlier on today, what's the subject or what's the one question? And his answer was along the lines of, I want people to talk about the things that they say what they really feel. I want them to really, like, if they disbelieve something, I want them to stand up and stand out about it. So what's the one subject matter or the one question?
I don't
And if you don't know the answer, that just leaves us on a cliffhanger for episode 2.
I don't know, you know.
Two.
Do you know why? Because I hope and I like to think that I allow people to feel really safe, and I get asked a lot of questions that they're terrified of asking anyone else, like all the way down to like, have you still got ovaries? Do you know what I mean? I get the most bizarre questions.
Should we leave it as
I think there is one question that people maybe should ask me more, which I don't talk about, is what are you still scared of?
Ooh.
And we'll leave it there.
Well, you know I'm going to ask that question.
But we're going to leave it there.
Maybe we should do a little catch up once this is aired.
Yeah.
And answer that question.
Yeah, we will.
Jack Feely, thank you so much for being
my
guest.
Thank you for having me.